You're listening to Heart of Mind Radio over the Progressive Radio Network, PRN.FM. I'm Catherine Davis, and today our guests are Deidre Haid and William Arnst. And together, they are the mystic and the physicist on the Tao of Surprise, your undiscovered key to awakening. And we're going to be discussing this today, as well as letting you know how you can connect yourself into this discussion. So to give you a little bit of information about our guest today, Deidre Haid began to see energy at a very early age, but she never understood why until her mother, poet Catherine Bloomer Haid, was diagnosed with advanced breast cancer when Deidre was 16. Together, the two women began developing a method of energy work they coined Radiance Healing, which led her mother to live 13 years longer than expected. Since then, Deidre's work has expanded into the development of a system of spiritual awakening and healing based on her depth of experience in the Kabbalah's Tree of Life. Her life's work, now renamed the Radiance Journey, is an inner energy practice of ancient wisdom traditions, meditation and mindfulness on the qualities of divine light for transpersonal growth. She has taught the Radiance Journey to thousands throughout the country, including Donna Karan, Urban Zen Center in New York, and the Omega Institute in Rhinebeck, New York. Her Radiance Pure Energy program has been sold in 132 countries. Deidre began her career as a dancer and choreographer, recognized by Robert Joffrey as founder of the dance ensemble Celebrations of the Sacred. Her nonprofit, the Foundation for Radiance, has given workshops on self-esteem and personal healing to the Women's Prison Association of New York and the Nevao Emancer, founded by Sister Trinidad Lopez, to help abused women of East Los Angeles. She is a member of the worldwide organization, the Transformational Leadership Council. So I'll just say hello, Deidre.
Hello.
I introduce William, because both of you are so interesting as human beings. I wanted to share the larger bios because so that people can really connect. William Arnst started his professional career as a research laser physicist, working on Star Wars high-energy lasers. He then moved on to software writing, AutoSys, an automated job control system currently in use by most Fortune 500 companies. He sold that company, retired, but then decided to make a film, creating, producing, and directing What the Bleep Do We Know?, an exploration of spirituality, quantum physics, neurology, and outrageous possibilities. The film and the companion book, with editions in over 20 languages, were international hits. So I just want to say hello and welcome, William. I certainly did see that movie. It was a groundbreaking movie, I must say. So welcome.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Uh-huh. Very good to be here as well. And so I would like to go a little deeper into this concept of surprises. And I know it has a little something to do, Deidre, with your book, the little book of surprises. So I'd like to get into that as well. But first, maybe you could give our listeners some idea of what it is to be a mystic or a mystic visionary, and how that has played into the work that you're doing right now.
Well, thank you. Well, a mystic is someone who has one foot grounded in this reality and another foot grounded in a greater reality. I wouldn't say alternative, I would just say more of reality. And the mystic experiences these other realities and then interprets them and shares them, what they've experienced with anyone who listens. The mystic usually speaks in metaphors. You think of Rumi. The mystic usually communicates through poetry because the mystical worlds are like that. They're very, it's a hard translation to be able to take them and then interpret them into the kind of the Western mindset, the linear thinking. But that's what a mystic tries to do. And I would say that, you know, everybody has a bit of a mystic inside of them. And my job is just to help you, encourage you to find that and be able to have that wonderful experience of the divine in your life.
Now, I would like to begin to broach this idea of, it seems the both of you originally coming from two different places, at least from the perspective, William, of you being a physicist. So I have felt that in these ages, these times with quantum physics, that it's coming very close to what we might have thought spirituality was about. But how did you make that leap from working with the Strategic Defense Initiative to be working with this kind of holistic exploration into the human spirit?
Well, I suffered with what I somewhat call PTSD, post-traumatic scientist disorder. And what that was, you know, I started off in physics and science, and I really thought science was the answer to pretty much everything. And you could predict all these phenomena happening, you could make amazing things, you know, so science was looking really, really good. But as I grew older, I started feeling something was missing, and I started to realize that science never told you why anything was the way it was. They just reported how it reacted. So if you pushed on something, how it reacted. If you dropped a ball, how it reacted. If you watched quantum particles, how they reacted, that sort of thing. So I started thinking more and more about why. What actually is time? Why is it that every bit of matter attracts every other bit of matter in the universe? Physics says, well, that's gravity. They don't say why. Einstein has a different take on it, but he doesn't say why. So I think it was my soul was whispering in my physicist ear saying, well, there's more here. There's more here. So when I met Deirdre, who lives in that more here, world, then I just was more and more interested in that, and eventually I started studying with a spiritual teacher, then another one, and you know, it was a progression. And then eventually I started seeing, like you said, that some of the physics that they were finding really does line up with what the mystics have been saying forever, and that really came together in the What the Bleep film, where really we looked at mostly quantum physics and neurology and said, wow, this is really pretty pretty similar. So maybe everyone's looking at the same thing.
It does seem so, though I find it interesting how there are still many, many people who can't translate science into spirituality because of perhaps growing up with dogmatic religious beliefs, and they're, you know, many people are kind of hardened against spirituality because of experience through religions. So before getting a little bit deeper into both of your relationship as the mystic and the physicist, I'd like to for you to offer your take on how some of these boundaries can be dissolved you know, people who are maybe a little far on the religious section and have a fear of mysticism, and perhaps people who are extremely scientific and kind of have a fear of invisible meaning or meaning in science. At least that's how I interpret it. Mm-hmm. So maybe, Dieter, you would like to start, and then, William, I'd love to hear what you have to say as well.
Yes, thank you. Well, that is the situation, how to, you know, open the doors to consciousness. I found that a rose blooms when it needs to, when it's supposed to bloom, and you cannot force a rose to bloom without damaging the rose. And so people who are not ready to become more open to spirituality, whether it's people who are very religious or people who are very scientific, I found it's not my place or anyone's place to try to convince them otherwise. The only thing that forms a bridge is understanding someone else's worldview, how they see the world, how they operate, and then finding a bridge. So people who have a fear of the mystical, I just try to make them feel better and love them up and say, oh, I understand. And then if somebody actually is just a little interested, I might lead them on a kind of a question and answer. Have you ever had this experience of awe? Have you ever had this experience of beauty, such with the birth of a child? Or did something ever happen where, you know, time stood still? And invariably people always say yes. And then I would say, well, that's a mystical experience. It's any experience that brings you into a greater, a deeper understanding of this time and this space. It's, unfortunately, the mystical has gotten a bad rap and been relegated into the shadow. It's become a taboo. But truthfully, we all have these experiences of connectivity and of a deeper resonance, and we're all looking for them. I just want to give it a name and say, well, this is what it is, and it's not that spooky. It's actually quite normal. And if you enjoy that, pay attention. Look for more of those moments in your life, because they will enrich your life. Mm. So that's how I approach it.
Excellent. And William, would you like to take a shot at that?
I will, but in I'll tell you the first thing that came to my mind, and then this will give you a little insight into the difference between the mystic and the physicist. The first thing that came to my mind when you said, and I'll take the point of view from scientists who may resist the mystical. First thing that came to my mind was a quote from Max Planck, who is considered the father of quantum physics. He said, quote, "Physics proceeds one funeral at a time," which, you know, he was saying because, of course, when he brought out quantum, the first bit of quantum physics, it was so counterintuitive and so strange that most of the scientific community, Einstein included, rejected it, said, no, this can't be true. This is not the way we believe the universe works. And so they were always discounting what Max was finding to be true. So he came up with the thing, science proceeds one funeral at a time, because people, we're all the same way. We have a certain worldview. We've grown up thinking a certain way. And at a certain point, and that gets turned upside down, it's very, very hard for people to completely shift. So for science, a lot of people, they grew up thinking in the universities, there is a dogma, and anything outside of the physical world is imaginary, has no reality. The only reality is this. And when you've grown up in that, and you've written papers, and then you got your PhD in it, and you've taught it, it's very hard to shift. That's just very hard for humans. So that's really what's going on there. And I sort of chuckled to myself the difference between the mystic and the physicist, because when you ask the question, I'm thinking science proceeds one funeral at a time. And Deirdre, the loving mystic, is saying, well, I create a bridge so that people can, you know, flower when they're ready, and in the interim, I just love them up. So that, in some respects, is a snapshot of the mystic and the physicist. Maybe that's what we should call ourselves, Steve, the fistic.
The fistic.
The fistic. What do you say?
Yeah, we've merged. We're now.
There you go.
Being we're fistic.
So, you know, and this is wonderful because it does give some insights into this this thing that you're working on together. You're going to be doing a speaking tour, and you will be in New York City on October 24th. I just want to throw it out there so people can start putting the date on their calendar at ABC Carpet, and people will be able to find out more about that later as we go through the program. But just to let everyone know that you will be available to really explore some of these issues. But I would really love also for each of you to give a sense of from the mystical perspective, from the scientific perspective, if we're thinking in terms of the overall light and inspiration that is in our humanity, in the experience of being on Earth, you know, we can be inspired in any way. One doesn't have to be a mystic to find that inspiration, or one doesn't have to be a scientist to make discoveries. So how has this divine light really worked through each of you, telling me not just the physical journey, I did this and I did this, but maybe some insight into how it transformed you, that greater divine light?
Well, for me, really the first truly profound experience of the light that really changed the course of my life was when I was 16. My mother was diagnosed with terminal breast cancer, given a year to live, and I started praying over my mother at night. Now, I grew up in a scientific household with two scientists, so there was no religion. I didn't grow up in any religion, but I just said, I'm going to pray. And I didn't even know what that was, but I did it. And after several weeks, a real light, a light that you see with your eyes, showed up in the room. And we saw it, and we were like, what is this? And we checked all the lamps, and then my mother said, well, whatever it is, my pain is gone. And my mother ended up living 13 years longer than was expected. We began to really study, my mother being a scientist, you know, what is this light? And began to start to read books. And my mother really got into the Tibetan Book of the Dead. I started studying an early copy of A Course in Miracles. Matter of fact, it was a Xerox copy that someone left at our house. And that light, for my whole life, through the whole journey of things that happen in life, obstacles, you know, I always would go back to that light and say, well, you know, where is that light? How do I connect with that light? And the light is for everyone. If you're alive, you have the light. The light is that life force of your soul. It's what gives you animation. It's what makes you're alive because of energy. And that energy is life force. And that's life. That's light right there. So we all have it. I just have a magnifying glass so that I look at it. So that's how it's really shaped. That was the beginning, and I've been very blessed to keep coming back to that light and rediscovering it for a long, long time.
Mm-hmm. And William, when you were moving as a scientist, I would say that that was still probably an inspiration of this divine light, but you moved into this other arena. So what was pivotal, and how do you see the light moving through your life?
Well, unlike Deirdre, I didn't have a monumentous event of the light coming from apparently nowhere and filling the room and healing my mother. For me, it was more of a, I would say, a slow, steady drift. As I read more and more, I just found myself being more and more interested in the spiritual books. And one of the early books that really got me was the Seth Speaks. You know, and Seth was this channel entity by Jane Roberts. And I would just read that, and I was so fascinated by what was being communicated there. And it just, it really, really, really interested me. And from an early days, I've always, the things that interest me really interest me, and if they don't interest me, I could care less. So I always follow what interests me. And so as I read more and more, it became, and a lot of the things I was reading were what you would call metaphysical. So, like in the Seth books, talking about the different realms of reality and how they're oversouls and how time is multidimensional itself. It's not one-dimensional like it is here, and you can move around in time, forward, backward, sideways. And that stuff, always, it really just interested me. I liked thinking about it, and so after 5 or 6 or 7 years of just reading all that stuff, then I started thinking, well, maybe I should learn to meditate. Everyone says how it's a great thing. So I started meditating and would go to workshops and start seeing, you know, teachers who would teach meditation. And then I started doing that. And so it was kind of a constant drift, but I was always just seeking more and more of it. And I certainly wasn't cracking the physics textbooks anymore. So that's, for me, it was the continental drift theory. It didn't really happen all at once. There wasn't a moment. But I just kept following, what the people say, follow your bliss, following what interested me. And it just kept taking me further and further down the road. At the time, I figured it was some sort of past life thing that was just pulling me onward, or maybe my soul was slowly nudging me that way. But that's how it happened for me.
That sounds wonderful, because I think that really gives the spectrum of what people in general experience from the different sides of the spectrum. So I'm sure there are many, many starting points. I would like for you to, both of you, to talk about this speaking tour that you're on, the Tao of Surprise in the Age of Surprise. Now, I would say, yes, I could agree that we are definitely living in an age of surprise, but I never would have thought to describe it that way. So maybe the two of you can begin to take this subject about surprises, and I'm happy to have you also speak a little bit about the book, The Not So Little Book of Surprises, which is really pretty a beautiful and amazing experience. I wouldn't even call it a book. It's an experience in book form. But yeah, let us know a little bit more about this Tao of Surprise.
Well, the Tao of Surprise, well, in the Tao there is surprise, and in the surprise lives the Tao. That's a very, very much a Taoist viewpoint. And I came up, I actually, in my meditations, heard the voice that said, you know, we must live in the Tao of surprise. And, but I have to give credit for the surprise, the beginning of the surprise, to my husband Will, who actually named our book The Not So Little Book of Surprises. The book is a series of wisdom and tools and insights and how to live life. That's what I've been teaching and sharing for over 20 years. And Will took these and put them together with these beautiful photos of Andre Balog and made a journey. The book is an experiential journey. And he said, well, I'm going to call it the Book of Surprises because it's surprising. This is information put in a way and seen in a way that, you know, I haven't seen it before. I read every book. And I just love that idea. I thought, well, that's great. And that was the end of that. But then I started meditating on surprise, and we started talking about, well, what does surprise do to the brain? What does it do to consciousness? And then I said, wow, you know, whenever you have an aha of transformation, whenever you see life differently or you've changed a behavior or you have an awareness that makes a relationship suddenly work, you know, it's a surprise. Just really started meditating on this. And then kind of simultaneously, I was getting this message about the Tao of Surprise. And then William wrote an article called The Tao of Surprise. And we were comparing notes and laughing and say, oh, my gosh, look at this. And on we go. And then the real kicker was sometime in the summer, I was in meditation. And I went into this beautiful of light, you know, this reality of heaven where I commune with the divine and the voice I attribute to God, or if you want to call it all that is, said to me, oh, well, welcome. You've come where I've asked you to come. You know, you followed the path because my message is that you are to know that you are living in the age of surprise, and this is what it means. And, you know, it says in Psalms 91, you know, if you know my name, this is one of the lines, is, you know, when you know my name, I will lift you on the pinion of angels and carry you. And that's what I really feel like that message was, a naming of a time. And we can't grapple something. We can't understand it. We can't, our consciousness can't get a hold of it until we name it, until we know what is it. And so the minute I got this message, we're living in the age of surprise, I got a great peace. I got a result. Like, oh, okay. So I'm going to shift my perception and just expect surprises. It's a new game now. There's a new game. There's a new consciousness. I can either try to deny it or try to pretend that it was 5 years ago or 10 years ago, but I'll suffer. I'll be miserable. And the only way to be able to understand the time that we're in with all of the surprises is to first name it and accept it and say, this is what it is, now what? What do I do with it? Well, there's a lot we can do with it. And that's where living in the Tao of Surprise, there are keys, there are tools to be able to navigate surprise and use it for the greatest transformation we've ever had for humanity. But we're all going to have to wake up, and it's like we especially people who have been on a spiritual path, the bar is now at a higher level. We have to up the ante of our commitment to waking up and to understanding reality and being able to work with the energies of reality to bring peace, to bring harmony, to bring calm in the chaos. And that's what we do in our tour. We give the core, we have three steps to living in the age of surprise, what you can do to quickly be resilient, to access wisdom, divine intuition, guidance, so that you can do really well in this time of where we never know which way's up. And Will gives the scientific knowledge and base of knowing what happens inside your brain when surprise happens. So that's also part of naming it. You know, when we know, we know. So that's what we're here to reveal. And I'll turn that back over to my lovely husband.
That would be me. what happens, and this is some of the research I did with What the Bleep that is circled around now, and it has to do with this thing called neuroplasticity. And neuroplasticity is the ability for the brain to be plastic, to be able to rewire. We have our neuronets are places, an idea is where neurons come together in a certain pattern. That's an idea. And the thing is, normally, the brain after a while gets pretty static. It doesn't really change much. In fact, some 20 years ago, they said the brain doesn't change at all once you're past 25. Well, they turned out that's not true. But there's this thing called neuroplasticity, which is the ability for the brain to quickly rewire into new patterns. And what happens during a surprise? When a surprise happens, your brain is flooded with dopamine. The hypothalamus secretes this dopamine. And what the dopamine does, among other things, is way, way, way increase the neuroplasticity in the brain. So there's that moment where your brain is very fluid. And in that moment, you can rewire the brain to something new. So when you think evolutionarily, why this happened was you're there at the campfire and suddenly you hear a huge crash in the woods. Well, you don't know what that is. You don't know if a tree just fell over. You don't know if the neighboring tribe is coming over to, you know, steal your wife. You don't know if it's a very, very angry bear coming at you. You don't know. So in that moment, your brain, you become very, very awake, very aware. You have 360-degree vision. Time slows down. You go basically into an altered state. So what we're saying is the fact that we're being surprised all the time, we can use that as a doorway because you're in that very fluid state, and instead of just reacting to it the way that we've done for, you know, a million years, there's a way in which you can bring in consciousness and actually use it to change, to transform, to rewire your brain, and then when the plasticity resets, you're a different person.
Very insightful to me, certainly, because I always think of that, you know, that fight-flight thing as being like the source of so much stress. It hadn't occurred to me that it was a doorway, but it actually makes so much sense that that's the case. So thank you for that little stretch and insight for myself as well. So I just want to let people remind again that Deirdre, how do I say your name correctly?
Deirdre. Gaelic pronunciation. It's like a deer with Dr. Dre attached to it.
Deirdre Head and William Arntz, the mystic and the physicist on the Tao of Surprise, your undiscovered key to awakening. And you're going to be in this region on October 24th at ABC Carpet, and that's Deepak Chopra's home base, Manhattan flagship. That's where he moves through to make his delivery of information. That's in New York City. I see on the website that you're also going to be at the New Life Expo October 28th, and that's very exciting. And since this is a broadcast that actually is international, I also want to mention that you're going to be, it looks like, Florida on February 25th of next year, First Unity Spiritual Campus. And people can find all the details they need at the website deirdrehade.com, deirdrehade.com. You'll find information on the Not-So-Little Book of Surprises. And you will also find the details on the events coming up. You could see when you will be able to see something maybe close to you with Deirdre Haidt and William Arndt, the mystic and the physicist, on the Tao of Surprise, your undiscovered key to awakening. So just to put that out there, because, you know, people come and go as they listen. We'll review it again at the end of the show. But did you want to say anything more about this actual event, or a contact number or something to let people know that they can register for that?
Well, I'm going to jump in here. Actually, when you said the Deirdre's website, you left out the R. It's deirdrehaide.com.
Thank you.
People always left the R. It's funny you left it out, because people are always leaving that R out. I don't know why. It's the hidden R, I guess. Or you can also go to the bookofsurprises.com, and that'll get you to the events page and all the other good stuff. So I just wanted to correct that, because I'm a physicist and that's what we do.
Thank you, sweetheart. That's okay. Even if you spell my name wrong, you'll get to me. We have all the spellings in the URL, so don't worry. But yes, okay. Book of Surprises, come to us, and we have everything. And I'm really looking forward to coming to New York. I lived in New York for about 4 years when I was a young woman. I was a dancer, a ballet dancer, and modern jazz dancer, and I love New York. Love coming. There's such a great energy happening of spirituality in New York. Everywhere I go, there's, you know, yoga, meditation. It's just flowering. And we just want to come and bring these keys that we feel are really transforming ourselves and other people in a rapid way to work with this age of surprise. And we've just seen miracles happening around us, of energy changing, of relationships healing, where we didn't think possible. So we just want to get it out and share this knowledge, so we can all have a lot of fun, even when it looks like there's not a lot to have fun about. We can shift this reality in a very concrete way. We can begin to change our reality, and I know that there are enough of us. In one of the lines in the Not-So-Little Book of Surprises, and I say, much of this material has come to me from the archangels, from different prophets that really speak. And, you know, I know that's hard to kind of go there and say, yeah, right, sure. So I understand the skepticism, but I'm just the messenger, and it's so beautiful. I just feel I have a duty to share it. But one of the beautiful passages I received was that they said, it's time to gather. It's time to come together. It's time for all the different spiritual paths, spiritual, non-spiritual, just people coming together. Because what happens when we come together, and we come together in goodness? We as humans create what in Kabbalah they call an Or HaMet, an overlight. Or HaMet means an overlight, because we are light. We are divinity. When we do anything in goodness or come together to raise consciousness or to learn or to brainstorm or to do service, we create this electrical charge, and this Or HaMet becomes an angel, and that angel goes into creation and works for us. Because an angel, a Melachim, in Hebrew it means a packet of light. That's what it means. That's the translation, a packet of light. And concentrated light of consciousness, the angels are the hands and the feet of the Creator. They do the bidding of goodness. And we can actually have a part in creating that light. So it's time to gather. It's time to come together. And that's the other reason we're doing the tour. We could just sit here in Santa Barbara and beam things out on YouTube, and we certainly do that. So please come see our YouTube channel. It's just under my name, and you'll see all the mystic and the physicist. But I said, no, we've got to get people together, bodies in the same room, and we all have to just be in the love and be in the knowledge, because it's healing for all of us, and it'll be healing for the world. So that's what we're doing. Will, did you want to add anything?
Well, the one thing I want to add is I just for a moment talking about the book, and like Deirdre said, I put on my filmmaker hat to put the book together, and like a filmmaker, a documentary filmmaker, you go through transcripts and you pull out the juicy bits. And so I went through these 10 years of Deirdre's teachings and transcripts and started pulling out what interests me. And I then, of course, associated the pictures with it. But I pulled that out, and it was just, again, like I said earlier, I just always follow what interests me, what intrigues me. And so I picked out all the intriguing things. Deirdre afterwards laughed and said, well, you sure picked out the ones I wouldn't have picked out, because I picked out the ones that were edgy or surprising or something new. So anyway, we did this whole thing, and then we went on the journey, the Tao of Surprise, the Age of Surprise, and just recently we realized, oh my God, this not-so-little book of surprises is the manual for living the Age of Surprise. And again, consciously, that's not what we were doing when we put the book together, but it's funny how the light, the divine works, the intuition works. We just did that, and now looking back on it, it's the manual. And I've written manuals. My first job as a laser physicist, I wrote a manual on this simulator that I wrote for high-energy lasers. When I had my software company, I wrote a 200-page manual for how to use this complex system that I created. And this is kind of the third manual. So it really is that. And like I said, the surprise was on us, that we created a manual without even knowing it.
Yes,
true. I guess that's the way it works sometimes, that, you know, you're in the flow, and the information comes together gradually. I imagine it would be too overwhelming. Certainly for me, if I knew all that it would be at the first page, it would probably be a little bit more daunting. Yeah. So that makes a lot of sense. I also found myself sort of enjoying the interplay that each of you have. And though this may not be, you know, consciously in the script, but if you could each say something about this sacred partnership that you have, or at least that's how it feels to myself, that you have this interplay where you may be starting from different starting points, but you're moving and flowing with each other in a way that expands something very, very new. And so maybe put that in the context of surprise, your sacred relationship.
Well, I would have to say this relationship for me was a very big surprise. But once Will and I started investigating it, we kind of feel that we've been moving towards each other our whole life, and just missing each other by a block or two, and then eventually bumped into each other. When we first met, I was pretty much a monk. I just decided I wasn't going to be in a relationship, and I wasn't for about 12 years. I divorced, and I said I was on the spiritual path. I'd been part of a tradition where I had a guru in India for many years, and I just decided my life's work is the spirit, and there's no need for a relationship. I'm married to God, and that's it. And then Will came along, and one thing developed after another. And I always tease him. I say, well, you pulled me off the mountaintop by the hem of my skirt. So I was like, what? But I'm so grateful, really, really grateful. But we have a lot of fun playing with that, because it was a really a big surprise for me. And it's always full of surprises. We have a pretty exciting house over here. Sweet. Do you want to say anything about this?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Deirdre, sure. Always, you know, she's, Deirdre is the loving, you know, the sweet, loving one, and she sounds a very nice. Here's was my experience of it. Deirdre would always, you know, we would see each other, and this is just, you know, more of, you know, and she would do workshops, and I would come. And, you know, we liked each other, but Deirdre's mantra was, well, I like him, but this will never work. This will never work. He's been,
now,
now,
people
I,
would say
I'm
to
now,
me, what about you? You're alone. And I would say to them, that'll never work.
That'll never work.
That's what I would tell people. They'd say, you guys are really hit it off. There's a charisma between you, and you really like each other. And I'd say, oh, but that'll, I know, but that would never work.
Yeah, and part of the reason why is I'm in my 60s, and I've never been married. So, you know, by the time someone's 60, they've never been married, can't teach an old dog bow wow new tricks. So, well, you know, so she's thinking, that's where I'm working. And she had two kids. They were teenagers. And, you know, and I led an independent life. And so, you know, that'll never work. I mean, come on. You can't teach an old dog new tricks. So that was kind of the underlying thing, and we sometimes joke that our higher selves from time to time would just step in and sort of mash us together, whether we thought it would work or not, and, you know, one thing led to another, and here we are.
Exactly. I think our higher selves did mash us together. Because I had to look at was my spiritual ego. That's something I talk a lot about, but I had to look at my spiritual ego because I was so rigid of my belief was I'm never going to be in a relationship and I'm married to God and that's the highest order there is. So I had to go through this entire like deraveling and reassessing spiritual hierarchy of what it means to be spiritual to say, wow, maybe the highest good is to be in this relationship and to find a common ground with an opposite. So I said, okay, and we took the challenge and we're having a lot of fun.
Yeah, and you've built this beautiful practice and enhanced each other in remarkable ways. And from my perspective, this really does illustrate for people what it means when you're saying to be responsive to surprises, to be open to change. You know, there might be some wonderful things there on the other side of that closed door. So
absolutely.
I think that this really does show. And you know, maybe, William, you could give it, like, this whole thing a little broader context for people who will be coming to your events and what some of the these tools will do or how they can learn to break through some of their own blockages.
Well, the tools we've been working on for a while, and Deirdre has really, really just studied and studied and studied this, and we came to three tools that really help in this age of surprise. And I don't know if I want to go into them now because they take a little explanation once you get in, you know, to really understand them. But these tools really help you navigate with this thing of surprise. And I really want to think Deirdre should jump in here because she's really been studying this the way she studies. And one thing I just want to say about this thing about a mystic, you know, people think mystics, oh, they just see things and they go into altered states and whatnot. But really, mystics also study. And Deirdre is one who will. She's like a bulldog who once they get something, they just have to know the truth of it. So, Deirdre, do you want to take this on the tools?
Okay, thank you, sweetheart.
And explain the relationship to the radiance journey, if you'd like.
Yes, thank you. And yes, that's true, and that's a really good point that Will brought up, is that, most real mystics are studied in a lineage or a tradition. I did grow up in a scientific household. I was in a laboratory at birth, and I literally grew up in a laboratory studying alongside my father doing cancer research, first at the University of Chicago, then Duke University, then St. Jude, University of Tennessee. So that's in me. I was going to be an anthropologist, and then I fell in love with dance. I met Joseph Campbell. He said, don't become an anthropologist, stay a dancer. And it's interesting, that meeting, I made that choice. So it's really in me to study and to build, to have a foundation of great mystics and prophets that I can go to and say, well, is this accurate? Is this correct information? So I do that, and I do a lot of study. So the radiance journey, the radiance healing journey, was built on this experience of my mother, of this light coming in. I then spent many, many years. I don't want to give away my age because, you know, I'm still a female, but I can just say my whole lifetime I've spent studying what is this light, where did it come from, studying, as I said, A Course in Miracles, then the Hindu, the Vedas, then studying the Zen, you know, Zen, Taoism, and then finally coming to the Kabbalah, which I've studied with two brilliant rabbis for over 20 years, 5 to 6 hours a week for 15 of those years. And the Kabbalah is really based on this light and the tree of life. So these core keys or tools come from this lifetime of study and knowledge, and I synthesized basic spiritual practices, and I distilled them down into these three steps, and that when we use them, we can meet the age of surprise. They really are for the age of surprise, and with that, Will has created a fabulous film, a movie, showing how surprise changes the changes your brain chemistry, changes your patterns, and then I give these keys, these tools, so that when surprise happens, big or little, you can automatically do them, and you can reset your brain. You can reset how your brain is wired, and if you do that enough times, you now can live in a new paradigm. You can see in the world a different way, and one thing I know for sure is that we are what we think. We act from our thinking, and we feel from our thinking. We think feelings are first. They're not. Feelings follow thought. Most people's thoughts are in the unconscious mind. You're just in touch with a feeling. Oh, I hate that person, or I love that person. But there's a thought beforehand. So these steps are to help you get into that thought so you know yourself, you know it's guiding you. And the more you know yourself and you know it's guiding you, the more you have, I don't want to use the word control because that's just inaccurate, but it's the closest. You have more say, more input in the development of your reality, what your reality looks like, what's in your reality, what happens around you. You're able to move into what I say is a magical existence, a synchronicity, magical meetings. I always say we can create magic. We can create good magic, and God brings miracles. But we need to create the magical field because that's when the miracle energy can really start to flow. So that's where we're going. That's what we're doing. And we feel like we've put together a really kind of a rock and roll evening. And then at the end, I'm going to give a taste of a radiance healing journey where I'll be doing, we'll go into the healing field and have an experience of that light. We'll bring the light into the room. So
that's
where to go.
I don't, sorry to interrupt you, but I realize we've reached
the end. The time is up for this particular broadcast, but those of you who are tuned in can go deeper and go to the event. It's on Tuesday, October 24th, and it's so the reception is at 6:30. The presentation is at 7. And you can find out more information by going to the website, deirdrehade.com, deirdrehade.com, and that's October 24th. And I see a phone number here. Shall I give that out, a 212 number?
Yes, that's probably the number for ABC Home, if it's 212, oh. So you can give that out. I don't have that number right in front of me.
All right, but people can go to the website. That's the best way to actually register and get your tickets. And also the New Life Expo, Saturday, October 28th, you'll be there. But I think that this event on the 24th is going to be such a rich experience. I'm really, really glad to have been able to talk to you about that. You're offering and bringing a gift through to the world. And today my guests have been Deirdre Hade and William Arntz, the mystic and the physicist on the Tao of Surprise, your undiscovered key to awakening. And I want to thank you both for being with me today on Heart of Mind Radio.
Well, it's been great. Thank you.
It's been great. Thank you so much for having us, and I hope to meet you when we come to New York.
Yes, I hope so. Thank you.
Okay. Have a great
bye-bye.
Day.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye. And you've been listening to Heart of Radio over the Progressive Radio Network, PRN.FM. Please go to our archive page at PRN.FM. You'll look for Heart of Mind Radio. You'll find information and links to these events, as well as how to connect with me, Catherine Davis. Stay tuned for more great programming. Have a beautiful day, a beautiful week, and we'll talk again soon.